or heard mention of someone from her past. She's always seemed perfectly content on her own, happy to be a confirmed spinster.
Who was he?
I ask. Never mind that, it was a long time ago, and I'm very happy on my own, she says, making it clear that she's finished talking about the matter. When you were 13, she says, patting the back of my hand, you came to me and asked if you should kiss a boy because all the other girls had. I give you the same advice now as I gave you then.
Which was?
Don't feel pressured into something you don't want, and certainly not because everyone else is doing it.
You're right, I say, putting my cocktail stick down on a neat little napkin. I've always felt marriage was about timing. When two people have found what they want and make a logical decision to do those things together, it's more likely to work out. Simon's never really questioned what he wants. It's a given that one day he'll inherit his father's company, but I...
What do you want, Beatrice?
Do you know what I really want? I ask, finding the courage to say it out loud. I want to concentrate on designing jewellery again. I want to use all the time I used to spend with Simon on creating a new collection. Something that's entirely my own. Aunt Jane gives me a sharp look of approval.
I think that's a wonderful idea. You've always had a good eye, and for as long as I can remember, jewellery has been your passion. Do you remember that when you were a little girl, the first thing you'd reach for when you came to visit me was my jewellery box?
Images of Aunt Jane's jewellery box come flooding back to me. It was an old wicker sewing basket in burgundy and cream, and inside were rolls of velvet, boxes of every shape and size, and endless strings of beads. I used to sit for hours trying on her diamond rings, signet rings, and watch chains she'd inherited. Never once did she rush me or tell me something was too precious to play with. She knew that box opened up so many stories for me. From dazzlingly rich women, flapper girls, and wealthy criminals in suits and spats. That box transported me to different times and places, and stories old and new. It was like stepping into a time-traveling machine in the safety of Aunt Jane's home. I do remember. Even then, I think that's what I dreamt of doing. But these last few years, that's somehow been forgotten. Maybe now's the time to say, to hell with men, and start realizing my dream of becoming a jewelry designer.
That's the spirit.
After all, you had your career as an auctioneer, and your life has always been rich and varied.
You're absolutely right, says Aunt Jane, clutching my hand supportively.
But I can't help wondering if I notice just a hint of what if in her eyes.
Lizzie and Jack, together with their families, invite you to join them in a celebration of their love. Houghton Farm, Wiltshire. Saturday, 12th of May. Chapter 5. It feels really weird to be back in Lizzie's childhood bedroom preparing for her wedding. Hardly anything has changed since we were 12 years old, and we were invited over for the first time to meet the new family puppy, Daisy the Springer Spaniel. I can remember so clearly Mum driving me up their lane, and me telling her to turn around when I saw the farmhouse for the first time. I thought we'd come to the wrong place. Compared to our boxy village home on the estate with only a patch of grass bound by 6-foot-high fencing, Lizzie's home looked like a castle. Even Aunt Jane's house was nothing compared to this.
I can't believe you still have all your trophies, I say, glancing at Lizzie's dog-handling prizes.
Dog agility was all you could talk about when we first met at school.
It was my first love.
You were such a geek, Liz, says Hannah.
I was a geek, says Lizzie, mock outraged, looking at Hannah in the mirror of the small dressing table.
The hairdresser positions a headband of wild roses on her, tweaking her elfin-like hair around it.
You were the one who cried when you found out school didn't teach Latin and Greek.
I still think they were helpful for the law degree.
Hannah, you really are a dweeb,
says Kat, battling with a pair of low denier tights.
We can't all be sports captain and snog most of our brother's mates by the time we're 15, says Hannah, retaliating.
You did snog a lot of boys, I say, browsing Lizzie's CD collection.
The album titles bring back memories of all the nights here in Lizzie's room. Saturday nights spent giggling over boys and listening to Radiohead, Coldplay and Keane, not forgetting Nirvana.
Better that than obsessing about one guy and never having the guts to talk to him, says Kat, teasing me.
I put down a picture of the four of us, aged 17 at our first music festival, plastic pint glasses raised to the camera. We just played a game of truth or dare with a bunch of guys we'd met that involved far too much exposure of body parts. Ah, Stephen Finnegan. How many hours I spent dreaming of you. I wonder what's become of him.
He's a fishmonger, says Lizzie.
Ugh, I squirm. Close shave. I think almost all the guests have arrived, says Hannah, glancing out of the window to the large garden below.
The purple blooms of the wisteria tickle the edge of the windowsill. I join her.
Can you see Jack?
Lizzie asks. Hannah scans the garden, from the gravel drive to the lawn beyond, which has been laid with simple wooden chairs facing a wedding arch of branches festooned with apple blossom. And further still, fields stretch into the distance, full of grazing sheep and bleating lambs. It's absurdly idyllic.
Actually, I'm not sure Jack's here, says Hannah.
For a split second, Lizzie believes he isn't there, until she catches me hitting Hannah, playfully, for winding her up.
Don't! Lizzie clutches her chest. You know I can think of nothing worse than Jack getting cold feet. I miss him so much.
Two things, says Hannah. One, Jack would never drop out of marrying you. And two, you saw him less than 24 hours ago.
I know, says Lizzie, pitifully. It feels like a lifetime.
You've survived much longer without him, I say. Think of all those weeks when he was stuck in the studio last autumn, and all the weeks at the start of the year touring the country with a band.
Don't remind me,
she says, pathetically. Living with Lizzie this last year has been like living with a lovesick puppy.
Having a rock star boyfriend does have its troubles.
Hannah and I are laughing at Lizzie when Kat mutters,
Shit!
Her big toe is pushed through the tights, and she wriggles it ruefully.
Would you like me to help with the next pair?
I ask. Watching Kat struggling with her tights puts me right back to when we were 8 years old. I always wanted to play dressing up, using my mum's heels and jewellery, but even then, Kat shunned the idea. I've been dressed in my white eyelet bridesmaid dress for a good 20 minutes, as has Hannah, but Kat is still in her bra and pants. Lizzie chose the same fabric for all the dresses, but each of us has a different style. Mine's cut above the knee with a V-neck and capped sleeves. Hannah's is mid-length and off the shoulder, and Kat's is a mini with fitted bodice and A-line skirt. Hannah and I love our dresses, while Kat is wearing hers under duress. But then Kat wears any dress under duress.
Has B's date arrived yet?
Kat asks Hannah, as I ball up the tights and inch them over her toes. I shake my head despairingly, remembering the moment I'd returned home from Aunt Jane's and told Lizzie about breaking up with Simon. After talking it through for what must have been over an hour, she told me,
I know just the guy to take your mind off him.
Liz! I cried, incredulous at her ceaseless desire to see everyone paired up. I've just ended a relationship of 4 years. I'm not going to jump into another one. I need a break from men.
Don't be silly. You'll love Dave. He's Jack's cousin. You know who I mean. He's been out with the guys before, rugby, cricket, stuff like that.
When she mentioned it, I did have a vague recollection of Simon talking about Jack's cousin, Dave.
I've only met him a few times, but he seems great. Jack and I have never been able to figure out why he's single.
I went to bed that night and completely forgot about her plan until the girls came round the next evening, Lizzie having invited them over to cheer me up. When I told them about the breakup over dinner, a silence engulfed the flat as if I just told them I was off to join the Cirque du Soleil.
But I'm setting her up with Dave, Jack's cousin, at the wedding,
said Lizzie, as if that changed everything. Such a good idea, said Kat vaguely. She still looked dumbstruck that I'd actually ended it with Simon.
And if you don't like him, said Hannah, I know Remy is desperate to set up a friend of hers.
A different date at each wedding,
said Lizzie, thrilled to bits.
I could think of nothing worse. What does he look like?
Hannah asks now, searching the guests below.
He looks a lot like Jack, just taller and with less facial hair, says Lizzie.
Then I think the answer is yes.
I resist the urge to look, my thoughts turning to Simon. When we've seen each other at work, I found it painfully awkward, despite Simon's efforts to be professional, and I've avoided all social situations where he might be there. He should really be here, seeing Lizzie getting married, but he emailed to say he felt it best he didn't come. To let you enjoy Lizzie's big day without upset. so like him, to put me first. It makes me wonder why I let him go. Particularly today when everyone else is paired up and I'm being set up with Dave.
Maybe Jack's cousin will turn out to be our wedding number four,
Lizzie teases.
Guys, let's not jump the gun,
says Hannah, seeing a look of unease on my face.
You know it's only a bit of harmless fun,
says Lizzie, stepping into her vintage lace dress, which hugs every curve of her body perfectly. For all I don't hanker after a wedding, there is something really special about seeing Lizzie preparing for hers. Something that makes me wonder if I might like to do the same one day, in spite of all my doubts.
We don't really expect him to fill Simon's shoes. It's too soon for that.
How's he doing, anyway?
Asks Hannah, stepping over to help Lizzie with the tiny mother-of-pearl buttons which run up the back of her gown. I scrunch up my nose uncertainly.
Hard to say.
We haven't really spoken, though we said we would. He hasn't let his emotions show at work, but I think underneath he's a mess. Bev thinks he's gutted, but I don't know.
What did Sir Hugo have to say about it all?
Asks Hannah.
He didn't. He's either forgotten or Simon hasn't told him.
You know how they are, stiff upper lip and all that.
And how are you doing?
Kat asks, successfully pulling up her tights. Nobody's said as much, and everyone's been really supportive. But I can tell none of them really gets why I broke it off with Si. I'm pretty sure they all think I made a mistake. I inhale deeply, gathering myself. After all, it's Lizzie's day, not mine. I'm okay. I've decided to pursue an old love of mine. For a moment, the three of them look at me with wrinkled brows and puzzled expressions. I thought I might try and find Stephen Finnegan on Facebook.
You're kidding, says Kat,
the other two stunned into silence. I shrug, allowing them to think for a moment that I'm serious.
Of course I'm kidding, I say, laughing, and eventually they do too, once the penny's dropped. I've signed up for a jewelry refresher course, that's all.
For a moment I thought you were serious about fishy Stephen Finnegan, says Lizzie, feigning fluster.
Never in a million years.
Other than Simon and Neil, the guy I dated at art college for a couple of years, there hasn't been anyone really significant. And certainly not my old schoolgirl crush.
That's really exciting, Bea. Good for you,
says Hannah.
It's about time you got back to the thing you're best at, says Kat. I always thought you were capable of making a living from jewellery. Remember when you set up a friendship bracelet store for Young Enterprise and you made a killing?
Oh yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Those bracelets were cute.
Didn't you customize them to have names?
Asks Kat.
I think I did. But those bracelets were nothing compared to your A-level art project, says Lizzie. Those Aztec-inspired necklaces were sensational.
They were pretty good,
I say, thinking back to all the times I sat up through the night perfecting them.
And the Peruvian collection you did for college finals was knockout. You're right to go back to it. You could really make a go of it if you want to.
Thanks, guys, I say, encouraged by their comments. If nothing else, it gives me some impetus to move forwards.
But moving on, let's talk about you.
Look at how beautiful you are. You're just like Carrie Mulligan.
Oh, Bea.
Lizzie's eyes brim with tears at the mention of her style icon.
Do you mean it?
I reach out to adjust a small flower in her hair that has drooped.
I've never seen you look prettier.
Now hurry up, you can't be too late. It's time for you and Jack to be married. Lizzie didn't want her bridesmaids walking down the aisle in front of her, so we left her with her parents in the house and took our places at the front of the congregation in the garden.
She's almost ready,
I whisper to Jack, giving his arm a rub and offering a supportive smile. He smiles back, anxiously, playing with his tie and cufflinks. Like a man, well, he's about to get married.
Have you met Dave yet?
Jack asks, indicating to his cousin who is sitting behind him. I recognize him from the photos of Jack's stag do that I couldn't avoid on Facebook.
No,
I say, extending my hand. Nice to meet you. I'm Bea. Dave jumps up to greet me, eagerly pumping my hand. He's extraordinarily tall and thin, with a crop of strawberry blonde hair. A sort of Stephen Merchant meets Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. I can tell instantly that there's no chemistry. But I feel I have to make an effort, for Lizzie's sake.
Hi, Bea.
He says, his eyes wide, head bobbing and smiling inanely.
Pleasure's all mine. Would you like to join me?
The West Country accent alone is enough to make me want to run for the hills. I think I'm to sit on Lizzie's side of the aisle. I gesture to where Kat and Hannah have taken their places with Henry and Remy. Hannah waves me over, indicating that there are two seats available. I dart my eyes at her to suggest I'd rather Dave remained where he is, but she either doesn't notice or, more likely, does notice but decides it'd be more fun this way, and beckons us both over. Everybody, this is Dave, I say, as we take our seats.
Hardly an improvement on Simon,
mutters Aunt Jane, who's sitting in the row behind. She's wearing a blue, wide-brimmed hat with ostrich feathers that must have been mouldering in her cupboard since the late 80s. I lean over the bench to kiss her twice on the cheeks. He's Jack's cousin. Be nice.
You know me, Beatrice. I say things as I see them.
Jane,
says the older gentleman next to her in a reprimanding tone. He's nattily dressed in a pale linen suit and sporting a cravat. I can't remember meeting him before.
Well, look at him. He might have at least brushed his hair.
It's clear that she isn't going to introduce her guest, so I offer out my hand. I'm Bea, Jane's great-niece.
Tom,
he says, shaking my hand, his soft, aging blue eyes smiling at me. I'm about to ask how he knows Aunt Jane when she interjects briskly with,
How are you getting on without Simon?
I'm okay. Keeping busy. Aunt Jane is explaining my breakup to Tom when Lizzie's mother arrives, walking quickly down the aisle, followed by the arrival of Lizzie on her father's arm.
Is she wearing Wellington boots?
Whispers Aunt Jane, catching sight of Lizzie's brand new white hunter wellies. I stifle a giggle and shush her.
It's all part of the rustic feel.
Mark, Carburetor's guitarist, stands and begins his acoustic rendition of Wet Wet Wet's Love Is All Around Us.
Such a perfect choice,
says Kat, dabbing her eye with the hanky she's retrieved from Henry's top pocket. It couldn't have been anything else. We clutch each other's hand tightly as Lizzie strolls down the aisle, her eyes fixed on no one but Jack.
Welcome to the marriage of Lizzie and Jack,
says the minister, the three of them standing under the wedding arch. When a gust of wind blows over the garden, apple blossoms scatter over Lizzie and Jack, and for a moment it's as if they're in their own miniature snow globe.
To love is to come from the paths of our past and to move forward, hand in hand, along the road of our future, ready to risk, dream, and dare.
It's such a lovely sentiment. I half expect to feel a twinge of loneliness. But instead, I find myself believing with all certainty that I did make the right decision in breaking up with Simon, and that someone is out there for me who's prepared to dream and dare. The service is short and intimate. The vows are written by Lizzie and Jack, with no awkward singing, much to my relief, and only a handful of readings. Just as the two of them are about to exchange rings, a cloud covers the sun, and I shiver, pulling my cotton shrug a little closer.
It isn't a sign,
says the minister, causing a ripple of laughter. But just as the service finishes and Jack is kissing Lizzie, rain bursts from the sky.
It's raining, cries Kat.
Unlike Carrie, I had noticed,
I call back, delighted at the turn of events, joining most of the other guests in seeking shelter.
Take my jacket,
says Tom, gallantly taking off his blazer and placing it round Aunt Jane, which he accepts slightly grudgingly. Dave offers to do the same for me, but I decline.
Come on, let's get you to the barn,
I say to Aunt Jane.
The barn,
she says.
Are we all to be animals for the afternoon, running around with our snouts in the hay?
No.
I pull my shrug closer, aware that Dave is sneaking not very subtle glances at my increasingly transparent white dress.
The reception is in the barn. It's all set up. You'll see. Come on.
Aunt Jane, unamused, purposely takes her time. Poor Tom's shirt is already soaked through.
Here, let me help, says a voice from behind.
I turn to find a good-looking American holding out an umbrella.
Thank you,
I say, my eyes locked on his olive skin, amber eyes, and dark, choppy hair that's begging to have someone's hands run through it. Dave stands next to him like a pound mutt next to a Crufts champion. He flashes a smile that almost floors me, then takes off, a lens camera in hand, chasing after the guests, snapping the fun and excitement of the rain shower. And then, Just as quick as it began, the rain stops, and in its place a huge double rainbow arches over the farm.
"My, my," says Aunt Jane, a mischievous smile forming on her lips, her eyes glinting. "Have we just found the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow?"
Chapter 6. "Who is that?" I ask Hannah, once I've safely deposited Aunt Jane on a dry bench under the wisteria and Tom is fetching her a glass of champagne.
"Oh, that's Leo," she says.
"Leo?"
"The wedding photographer. He's very nice, in a Californian kind of way. Lizzie managed to talk him into doing our wedding too."
"Good to know." Hannah eyes me suspiciously. "I know how much you were worried about your photographer dropping out." I fumble, hoping she won't figure out my alternative interest in Leo. "It's great you found a replacement."
"Uh-huh."
She drinks her champagne, one eye still on me. We watch Leo take Lizzie and Jack to the far corner of the garden, the sheep grazing behind them, where he begins directing them for their photos.
"She should have worn Carrie's Bo Peep dress," says Hannah.
The thought of Lizzie in a corset and bonnet makes me laugh. Before today, I couldn't have imagined them being any more loved up, but they seem to have entered a whole new stratosphere.
"They put the rest of us to shame."
"Who do?"
asks Remy, joining us. She looks adorable in a tiny tuxedo.
"Lizzie and Jack," says Hannah.
"You think?" Remy reaches out her hand and pulls Hannah towards the bottom of the garden, where she starts chatting to Leo. I envy her ability to talk to him so effortlessly. I'd probably end up talking gobbledygook with a mouth so dry my lips would stick to my teeth. "Stop it, Bee. Just because you're back at Lizzie's childhood home doesn't mean you have to behave like a teenager."
"They look happy,"
says Dave, joining me and handing me a glass of champagne. "Yes, they do." I use the pretense of looking towards Lizzie and Jack to continue watching Leo.
"I admire anyone who gets married. It can be easy."
"Maybe when you find the right person," I say vaguely.
"Yes,"
Dave bobs his head. It's as if it isn't on quite tight enough.
"Tricky business, though, finding that person."
"I reckon it's mostly timing."
"Do you?"
"Sure, you know, it's about two people knowing what they want and being prepared to commit. Don't you think?"
"I wouldn't know,"
he says, with a nervous laugh. "I know it's not very romantic, but it applies to everyone I know who's married or engaged."
What about you? Are you ready to commit?"
"Hardly," I say, downing my champagne. The waiter passes with a tray and I grab another. "I'm not sure I want another relationship." Hopefully that makes it clear I'm not interested. Dave looks into his glass and, realizing it is empty, quickly excuses himself. "You weren't being cruel, were you?" asks Kat a moment later, stepping into Dave's place.
"Only to be kind."
Kat offers a gentle but reproachful look.
"Henry did say he's not very worldly. I think cricket and ale is about all he knows."
"Not to worry," I say, laughing it off. "I'm not on the market, anyway." We sip our champagne quietly for a moment, watching Hannah and Remy in front of Leo's camera. Their faces lit up, Remy on Hannah's back.
"They're really working it today," I say.
Hannah needed Remy in her life. She softened her. I agree. Before she met Remy, Hannah would never have dreamt of giving her girlfriend a piggyback, let alone have a photographer take a picture of her doing so. "Does her grandmother know about Remy yet?" Kat asks.
"Nope."
Good job she can't see this PDA. Remy, still on Hannah's back, has stretched round to kiss her. I snap a shot on my phone. "I can't believe how much more relaxed Hannah is since they met," Kat says wistfully. "What do you think Henry does for you?" I ask.
"Good question."
She glances over to where he is talking to Jack's brother. "What do you think he does for me?" Kat and Henry are one of those couples who enjoy bantering and bickering with each other, riling each other. I've never quite understood it. Kat's normally so laid back and conflict averse, but I've given up trying to fathom it, so I fudge a response. "He compliments your easygoing approach to life, he G's you up a bit, and embraces your tomboyish spirit."
"I can't dispute that. I could never have a Jack and Lizzie relationship, all that mooning. It looks exhausting.
But what do you want from a relationship, Bee?
I know Simon wasn't the most exciting of boyfriends, but he was kind, really kind. It's hard to top that.
My eyes moved towards Leo, who was squatting, the small of his back exposed, shooting another couple from the ground.
Bee?
Yes, I ask, still absorbed in Leo.
What was it you felt was missing with Simon?
A bit of freedom, or spontaneity, I suppose, I say, still staring.
You don't think he was capable of giving you more space?
I pause, uncertain of the answer, moving my eyes away from Leo.
What do you think?
Cat shrugs.
I think freedom is in the mind.
I might need more champagne to make sense of that. I laugh it off as Henry walks over, looking suave in light tweed. With his dark hair and eyes and impeccable posture, he looks like a romantic suitor from Downton Abbey.
Ket, he says briskly in his clipped South African accent when he's a few feet away. It's time we had our photograph taken.
He makes it sound more like a command than something they might do for fun.
Got to go, she says. Henry's hand is outstretched for her, though he's still standing some distance away.
And then with a wink and a glance towards Leo, she adds,
Go get Dave. You don't want to miss your opportunity with the photographer.
Who's next?
Calls Leo, after Kat and Henry have posed, side by side, his hand behind her back. Before I can do anything about it, Dave is waving enthusiastically at Leo.
Oh God, please don't let him think Dave is my boyfriend.
Leo ushers us forward to beneath the large oak tree, where Dave takes my hand in his, which is clammy. Out of politeness and trying my best to make an effort for Lizzie, I hold it. I've never felt so wooden.
This is fun, says Dave, keenly.
Nice and relaxed now,
says Leo, his eye pressed against the camera.
Sweet Lord in heaven, how does he make that zoom lens look so erotic?
And smile.
Never have I produced a more contorted smile.
I'll bet that was a good one, says Dave.
Leo flicks through the shots, his perfectly formed biceps flexing beneath his polo shirt. I dread to think how the photos look.
Maybe just a few more.
Act natural. He doesn't know you think he's the hottest thing you've seen since Matthew McConaughey's strip scene in Magic Mike.
Perfect,
he says, after a couple more attempts. He indicates that we can go. Dave bounds off in search of canapes.
Thank you. Sorry if we made your job difficult, I say,
wincing inwardly at my terrible attempt at a flirtatious tone.
Don't worry, not everyone's photogenic,
he says, positioning the next couple.
Well, that's bloody charming.
My face burns with embarrassment, but he's already looking down the lens, framing his next shot, clearly oblivious to my existence.
Lucky for me, I'm done with men for the foreseeable future.
Are we really having the wedding breakfast in the cowshed?
Asks Aunt Jane as we saunter in past the potato crates, stacked artistically at the entrance and cascading with loose-petaled flowers in delicate shades. Tom and Dave follow on behind.
It's really fashionable. Plus, it's a free venue. Weddings are expensive these days.
I stop at the seating plan, which is written on browned paper and tacked to an easel made out of old pallets. Lizzie has put Tom next to me on one side, and Dave on the other.
So long as they don't expect me to eat cattle feed.
Even Aunt Jane's look softens when she enters the barn and sees for herself just how romantic it feels. Our homemade bunting in muted colours hangs from the rafters, and circular tables are dressed with white cloths, gleaming glass and shining silverware. And there are the first of the summer flowers and dancing candles everywhere.
This is us,
I say, showing Aunt Jane and Tom to their seats, which are prettily decorated with a Hessian sash holding a trio of wild flowers.
How will we keep warm?
There are blankets and muffs available, says Hannah, arriving with Remy. Lizzie has sweetly put us all together rather than split us up.
Taken from the stable block, I suppose, continues Aunt Jane.
Tom pulls out Aunt Jane's seat. It's clear from the glint in his eye that he is amused by her scathing commentary.
And what do you make of all this?
She asks him.
I think it's very sensible. Spending less on the wedding means saving more for the future.
Well, she bristles, isn't it just like you to see the positive?
There's something in the way Aunt Jane speaks to Tom, the sparky banter between them, that makes me think they've known each other for a long time. And I wonder how they met.
and why I haven't heard of him before. I pull out my seat and make myself comfortable between Tom on my right and Dave on my left. Dave reaches for the bottle of champagne, uncorks it, almost taking out someone's eye on the next table in the process. "All rise for the bride and groom," calls the best man. I reach out my hand to Lizzie as she and Jack weave their way through their guests towards the long top table at the far end. "I've never seen her look so happy," I say.
"Nor Jack," says Dave. "I envy what they've got."
"You'll find it one day."
"You may not," whispers Aunt Jane, with an impish giggle. "I can't believe this will be us soon," says Hannah, receiving an asparagus tartlet from the servers who were out almost as soon as Lizzie and Jack sat down.
"I can't believe you haven't told your grandparents yet," says Kat.
"And I hasn't told your grandparents that I'm a girl. They think I am a boy," says Remy,
for the sake of Dave, Henry, Jane and Tom. She laughs at how ridiculous it is. Dave almost spits out his champagne.
"Why ever not?" asks Aunt Jane.
"It wasn't my intention," says Hannah, a touch defensively.
"But they assumed Remy was a man's name and I didn't correct them and now too much time has passed."
"What difference does it make whether she's male or female?"
For all of Aunt Jane's snobbery, she could never be accused of being prejudiced.
"It would make a lot of difference to my grandparents."
"But why should it matter what they think?"
Hannah looks at her plate.
"Because they're paying for the wedding."
Aunt Jane releases a guffaw of delight, relishing Hannah's moral dilemma.
"So it's keep stum and get married, or tell all and risk everything?"
"That's about it, in a nutshell."
"Well, it's perfectly simple, my dear. You must tell."
Hannah casts Aunt Jane a questioning glance.
"The lie of not telling is unforgivable, for both them and for you. It would be better not to marry than to marry on a lie."
"I'm not sure I agree," says Henry, wading into the conversation.
"What do you mean?" Kat asks him, fiddling with her knife.
"Hannah hasn't lied. If her grandparents have misinterpreted the facts, that isn't her fault."
Kat narrows her eyes. "But she's had several opportunities to put them straight."
"People hear what they want. Maybe they've chosen to believe Remy is a man."
"That's bullshit," says Kat, attacking her asparagus with her knife.
"I just think sometimes it's kinder to keep people in the dark. Why cause unnecessary fuss?"
An awkward lull hangs over the table until Remy, seemingly oblivious to Kat's irritation, pipes up with,
"How are your wedding plans?"
"Fine, you know, all the big things, like the venue are booked. I'll figure out the smaller things nearer the time."
"Kit would get married in her parents' front room,"
says Henry, chuckling.
"It's what I love about her. My no-frills gal."
He pulls her tight and kisses her head.
"I'm putting a wager on her walking down the aisle in sweatpants." "Why not?" Aunt Jane says with a dry laugh. "After all, this bride wore Wellington boots."
Aunt Jane excuses herself between courses, muttering about the lack of facilities.
"Am I to relieve myself behind the hay bales?"
"How do you know, Aunt Jane?"
I ask Tom, as we're served spring lamb, crushed potatoes and French beans.
"From our days working at an auction house. Probably long before you were born."
So they have known each other a long time. As colleagues. Or something more.
"And you've kept in touch over the years?"
"Life took us in different directions, but recently we got back in touch,"
he says, a little cryptically. "And you're just friends?"
"Oh, yes,"
he says.
"Definitely just friends. She thought she might need one today, a companion in the midst of all this young love."
He cast his eyes around to see if she's in earshot.
"And we might seem like old codgers now, but I knew your Aunt Jane in her miniskirt and motorbike days."
"Pardon me,"
I falter. I had no idea Aunt Jane used to have a motorbike, though, when I think about it, it doesn't seem so surprising. Very little surprises me when it comes to Aunt Jane.
"Your Aunt Jane, when we met, she had a motorbike. She used to ride it to work."
"In a miniskirt?"
"Surprising, isn't it?"
he says, his eyes twinkling, his flyaway white hair standing on end as if in excitement.
"What is?"
asks Jane, returning.
"Nothing,"
I say, and Tom winks at me, leaving me to wonder what else I don't know about Aunt Jane. A peal of metal being tapped gently on glass cuts through the hubbub of conversation and the room falls silent.
"Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention?" says Lizzie's father. "It gives me great pride to be standing here today."
A sort of veil comes over my senses, not because Lizzie's father's speech isn't interesting, but because I've become aware of Leo working the room with his camera. His movement around the barn, confident yet unobtrusive, is mesmerizing. From the way he squats his lean body effortlessly, to the way he rests one foot on a chair, using his knee as a prop, to how he sidles past guests, brushing himself against them without a hint of self-consciousness.
"He's quite the sight," whispers Aunt Jane, when she catches me staring.
"Mmm," I whisper back, trying to hide my interest, but feeling my cheeks flush. Though typically American and rude. "Check out the picture I got earlier of you and Remy kissing. I'll send it to you," I say to Hannah, my bowl of eaten mess scraped clean in front of me. Her phone beeps and she smiles when she brings up the photo.
"It's pretty great," she says, handing her phone to Remy, who in turn hands it to Aunt Jane, and it's passed round the table until it finally reaches Henry.
"Wouldn't it be funny if I accidentally sent it to your grandparents?" says Henry, slightly slurring his words.
"Don't you dare," barks Hannah.
"Just bringing up her name? Grace, Graham, Grandma, Os, I mean it, Henry, don't."
Kat shakes her head. "He won't." "Henry, hand it back. Joke's over," I say. He waggles it at me, like a child taunting another kid with a toy. He can be such a prig. I swear sometimes I really don't see what Kat sees in him. Furious, Hannah jumps up and tries to grab her phone and in doing so knocks it out of his hand and onto the table.
"Uh-oh,"
says Henry, bursting into fits of drunken giggles, his eyes wide.
"What?"
asks Hannah. She isn't laughing.
"I think you just hit send."
"You're fucking joking me."
All colour drains from her cheeks.
"Pass it to me. Now."
Henry picks it up and relinquishes the phone. Collectively, we hold our breath as Hannah checks it, beads of sweat breaking on her brow.
"You shit,"
she says, glaring at Henry.
"It's sent."
Chapter 7. "Everyone huddle round," calls Lizzie, from where she's standing on the back of a trailer, attached to one of her father's tractors. "Time for the bouquet toss." A throng of women hurtle themselves towards the front of the crowd of guests who've gathered to say farewell to Lizzie and Jack. I hang back awkwardly, embarrassed at how eager they all look, and catch sight of Leo standing to one side, no doubt hoping to capture the flowers in flight and the response of the excited recipient.
3, 2, 1,
says Lizzie, throwing the bouquet with such force that it travels past the hopefuls at the front and hurtles towards us drifters at the back.
"Get it, Bee!"
shouts Kat as it tumbles towards me as if in slow motion, the white ribbons flaying in the night sky like the tentacles of some monster from the deep. I make no attempt to grab it, and it falls with a thud at my feet. As I'm looking at it, forlorn on the gravel, someone picks it up and then, in the next instant, Dave is there.
Fuckity fuck.
"It's yours,"
he says, handing it to me with what I think is meant to be a suave grin.
"Really, no thanks."
"Who got it?"
cries Lizzie, jumping up and down on the back of the trailer to catch a glimpse. Before I can stop him, Dave has pushed the bouquet into my hand and held it aloft. Lizzie coos in delight and the guests are clapping and fawning at Dave and me. Can this be any more mortifying?
"Over here," says a voice.
And yes, in fact it can. Leo has his lens in my face, and Dave immediately puts his arm enthusiastically around me, pulling me close. For one awful moment, I think he's going to kiss me. Thankfully, Leo is quick to move on, probably because I'm so unphotogenic. "I'm just going to say goodbye to Lizzie. Why don't you go to the bar?" I say to Dave, extricating myself from his clasp and thrusting the bouquet at Kat. Shortly after we've said our farewells, Lizzie and Jack wave goodbye from the back of the trailer, both of them sitting on thrones made of hay, and trundle off into the night. It's the picture-perfect end to their magical day. "Where's Henry?" I ask Kat, who's still holding the bouquet, which looks oddly incongruous in her hand.
passed out on a hay bale.
It was a good wedding, I say, slipping off my shoes and hopping gingerly over the gravel to the lawn.
Bar the bit when Henry dropped Hannah in it.
Yep, not his finest moment.
Where is she anyway? Skyping her grandparents. Ouch. Aunt Jane's right, though. It is better to be honest. Henry may have done her a favour.
Sure, says Kat, sounding unconvinced. Has Aunt Jane gone home?
She called her tonight when the barn dance began. Who could blame her? Your man Dave gave Gareth from Four Weddings a run for his money on the most ludicrous dancing.
First of all, Dave is not my man. And second, you're right. For a moment I thought he'd started having a fit.
Kat laughs at the thought of it.
I might call it a night too. What about you?
I've a Dave to get rid of first. And someone else to hook? She directs her eyes towards Leo.
Way out of my league.
And unspeakably rude, if mightily gorgeous. You mean the way Carrie was out of Charles's league? She has a point.
I might go off in search of Hannah first. See how she's getting on.
Far less stressful. I'm heading in the general direction of where I last saw Hannah, behind the Portaloos, when Dave stumbles towards me. B, he slurs, three sheets to the wind. He eyes me like a teenage boy at a school disco, calculating whether or not to make a move. Beautiful B. Dare to kiss me and I'll knee you in the balls. Barely able to focus, he says,
How's about it? Fancy coming back to the hotel?
Tempting, I say, backing away from his ale-soaked breath. But Lizzie's parents have made up a bed in the house, so I don't think...
B.
Yes? I ask, when he fails to say anything more.
Why would someone as beautiful as you nor want a relation?
He hiccups loudly.
Ship. It's such a waste.
How the hell do I get rid of this? I think. And then it comes to me.
I tell you what, you get on the bus back to the hotel and I'll head along once I've made sure Lizzie and Jack's gifts are in order. I promise I'd make sure they're safely away at the end of the night. He frowns at me, swallowing back a burp.
But how will you get there?
Taxi.
Bridesmaids perk.
Miraculously, this seems to placate him.
Wait for me in the bar. I won't be long behind you.
He smiles coyly.
The moment I saw you, I knew you liked me.
I shoot him an insincere smile and he walks away backwards, tumbles, gets up and, without embarrassment, climbs onto the bus. Thank Christ for that, I mutter, when the bus door is safely closed and he's gone. It takes me a minute or two to locate Hannah, and when I do, it's clear from the intense look of concentration on her face and the finger jammed in her ear that now is not a great time. Plan B, I say, and head to the hot dog and donut van, which Lizzie and Jack hired for late-night munchies.
4 sugar donuts, please.
Hungry?
For a moment, I think it's the donut guy asking. But then I realise that Leo is leaning against the van.
4 donuts, B, really? Great impression to make. I thought I might share them.
Yeah, right.
With your boyfriend?
He looks around for Dave.
Oh, that wasn't my boyfriend. That was Dave.
Dave?
My wedding date. The groom's cousin.
Gotcha.
I offer him a donut, which he accepts.
I thought the chemistry was off, but hey, when it comes to you English, it's not always easy to tell.
Right, I say, pleasantly surprised that he should have given the chemistry between Dave and I any thought at all, particularly given his previous comment.
I'm B, Lizzie's flatmate, or I was Lizzie's flatmate.
I extend my hand, wishing I'd had more to drink to lessen my nerves.
Nice to meet you, B. I'm Leo,
he says, taking my hand. Tingles of excitement rush through my fingers and up my arm, causing hundreds of tiny goosebumps, and I pull my shrug closer around my shoulders.
Another donut?
I ask, offering the box. As we eat, I look out over the lawn at the late night stragglers chatting merrily and the fairy lights suspended in the trees. Country music drifts over from the barn as I search for an opener.
How does an American photographer find himself in rural Wiltshire?
He smiles lazily, wiping sugar from his supple hands and mouth.
I like to move around, see new things, meet new people. Last week I was in Morocco, doing a wedding there.
Sounds pretty idyllic. The sort of life I'd like to have.
He sits down at the top of the lawn, his legs bent up in front of him.
I shoo away a thought of me straddling him.
What is it you do?
I work as a PA. I sit down beside him, a little tentatively, wishing I had more of his easygoing spirit. Then the unphotogenic comment flashes through my mind again, and I stiffen slightly.
But I've realized that what I'd really like to do is be a jewelry designer.
What's stopping you?
He asks, holding my gaze. Time, I say.
And money. You don't have someone who could help you out?
I push away an unhelpful thought of how Simon would have offered to help if I'd asked.
Afraid not.
Picking absently at a blade of grass, Leo says knowingly,
"The things worth having are worth striving for."
Did you have to graft to become a photographer?
A wry smile forms at the corner of his mouth.
Let's just say it wasn't straightforward.
But it was worth it in the end?
He shrugs.
One wedding blurs into another.
Tell me about it. He looks at me quizzically, as if this isn't the response he's used to hearing. My three closest friends are all marrying this summer. It feels like one long bunting sewing session.
And you and Dave?
He says, a cheeky glint in his amber eyes.
Actually, I just turned down a proposal, but not from Dave.
He wasn't the one?
I laugh wearily. My father did a good job of making me question if the one really exists. Gazing up at the stars, he lies back, placing his hands behind his head.
Sounds like we might have something in common.
What did yours do? I feel a bit prim sitting poker straight beside him, but it feels too bold to lie down next to him.
Took off when I was 7, leaving my mom to raise me and my brothers alone.
Mine left when I was 5. Kind of spoils the idea of marriage, right?
Right,
he says, scanning the night sky.
But then again, if you'd stuck around, I might not have been so motivated to make it on my own. I couldn't sponge off my mom forever.
Did you always want to be a photographer? He nods.
I like the idea of being able to work anywhere, being able to see the stars from different parts of the world. You see Orion's belt up there?
Which one is it? I ask, scanning the night sky.
Put your head here.
He pats the ground beside him and, slightly awkwardly, I shimmy in beside him. There, he says, pointing upwards. The one with 3 stars in a row. When I still don't see what he sees, he takes my hand in his and holds it up, pointing into the dark. I try really hard to act natural, but my heart is racing 10 to the dozen. I see it. He lays our hands down, brushing his fingers over mine.
In the Namib Desert, you feel as if you could reach up and touch it.
He's rubbing his thumb against my hand and has turned his gaze to me. Self-conscious, I continue to stare at the stars. And when I should be thinking about Leo, my mind is instead awash with Simon. What would he feel if he knew I was lying here looking at the stars with another man?
What are you thinking?
He asks. I turn and our eyes lock. Before I can stop myself, I blurt, I can't remember what it feels like to kiss someone new.
Let me remind you, he says, leaning in.
I swear my heart almost catapults out of my chest when his lips press against mine, still dusted with sugar. When we eventually come up for air, Leo grins at me,
verging on cockily, and says,
So, how did it feel?
Oh, just one of the best kisses of my life. My lips are tingling so much I'm not convinced. They'll work.
Good to know I've still got it when I need it, I manage.
He smiles coyly.
Weddings do that.
Do what?
Remind people they've still got it.
What the heck does that mean?
Well, he says, sitting up and stretching. Time I packed up. I've a wedding in Truro tomorrow. Long drive in front of me.
Is that it? I sit up woozily, still reeling from the kiss. But Leo is already on his feet, and whatever moment we shared seems to have vanished. I smooth out the creases in my dress.
Well,
I guess I'll see you at Hannah's wedding next month.
Right, he says, making the connection. Guess I'll see you there. And without any further ado, not even a peck on the cheek, he's off, leaving me on the grass, my mind in turmoil.
Chapter 8. Tidy house equals tidy mind, I say to myself the following week, folding the last of my long-sleeved tees and placing it in the drawer with the others. I've arranged them by colour, stacked on their sides, and have done the same for all my other tops too. Marie Kondo would be proud, but so far it hasn't done anything to help the muddle in my head that's been there since I kissed Leo. And it certainly hasn't sparked joy. I wish you were here, Liz. You'd know how to cheer me up. Lizzie would sit me on the sofa and put on Notting Hill, allowing me to watch the "There's Something Wrong with This Yogurt" scene over and over without complaint or judgment. Then she'd make me a stack of pancakes as big as my head and smother them in maple syrup, cream and blueberries. And after all that, she'd tell me everything that's great about me and reassure me that breaking up with Simon was the right thing to do, even if she doesn't fully believe it. That kissing Leo wasn't a betrayal, and that when I see him at Hannah's wedding, he'll want to kiss me all over again. Which I should do without regret, because I'm still young and should be having fun, not fretting about everything. Because the truth is, I haven't been able to stop wondering what Leo meant when he said, "Weddings remind people they've still got it." Was he trying to tell me he has a different girl at every wedding? That I was just another nameless conquest? I feel sort of foolish about it all, and worse, disloyal to Simon. Because how would I feel if Simon was kissing someone else after only a few weeks? You tell me to stop making a big deal of things, Lizzie. I throw one of her bras, which I found in my undies drawer, into the cardboard box in the hallway, already overflowing with the stuff she's forgotten to take with her. You'd also remind me I have a potential flatmate coming round in 5 minutes and to hurry myself up. But who could be better than Lizzie? I trudge downstairs carrying the cardboard box. I had begrudgingly put an advert on spare room last week for someone to rent Lizzie's old room, but I'd rather pay double than have the wrong person. I put the box down and cast my eye about the place. There's no laundry on the radiators, jackets on the floor, or bike parts on the stairs. Whether I like it or not, Lizzie has gone, and so too has Simon. You're on your own, Bee. I swallow back a surge of emotion, and as I do, I hear the sound of the latch on the garden gate. I open the front door to find a woman younger than me, her hair in a ponytail, wearing a bulky sweatshirt and carrying a large holdall. "Hi, you must be Eva. I'm Bee," I say, reaching out my hand.
"Hi, Bee,"
she says, in almost a whisper. "Come in." We stand together in the hallway, the space feeling a little tight with her cumbersome belongings. "Feel free to pop your bag down," I say, when she shows no indication of letting go of it. But she doesn't. Instead, she clings to it even tighter.
"What's in there?"
"Let me show you round, and then we can have a chat, get to know each other a bit," I continue, hoping to lessen her unease. I lead her through to the kitchen and dining room, which she gives a cursory inspection. "All pretty self-explanatory," I say, showing her the washer-dryer in the understairs cupboard before taking her to the living room, where I've beadwork out on the coffee table. The front room gets great light in the evenings, and it's big, as you can see.
"Is the bedroom at the front or back of the house?"
she asks, as we head upstairs.
"The back."
"Good," she responds quickly, and I find myself wondering what seedy plan she has for it. "This is it." The room is unrecognisable without Lizzie's belongings piled here, there and everywhere. As it is, it's no more than a box with a bed, a wardrobe and a small table with a few boxes of jewellery supplies stacked on it. It looks as empty as I feel without Liz. "It's the smaller of the two, but still a good size. Plenty of room for all your things, I imagine." She pays little attention to any of the room other than to check that the curtains close fully, which strikes me as a little odd, but each to their own and all that. "And this is the bathroom." I open the door. She barely looks in. "Can I get you a cuppa?"
"Oh, that's okay," she says,
beginning to sway a little, now making me the nervous one. She also has a look in her eye that makes me think she preferred to leave, so it comes as a surprise when she says,
"I'll take the room if you'll have me."
"Okay," I say, inching past her to go downstairs.
I just thought it might be good to get to know each other a little before we make a decision. You may not like me. I joke awkwardly. And more to the point, I really may not like you.
I can tell we'd be fine. When do you think you can let me know?
There's a note of desperation in her voice. I have a couple of other people to see. Maybe the end of the week?
Oh, right, she says, disappointed.
Important that we're both sure, I think. I'm just about to open the door when a sound comes from her that I can't place. A sort of muffled whimper. Are you okay?
Sure,
she says, beginning to sway again, this time a little faster.
I'd best be off.
If you're sure, I say. But as I reach for the lock, a huge cry sounds from beneath her sweatshirt. Eva? After a moment's contemplation, she drops her bag to the floor and lifts up her top. Strapped to her chest in a papoose is a tiny baby dressed in pink.
How old is she?
I ask, dumbfounded. Then it all falls into place. Of course. The bag is full of baby paraphernalia, and she needs a quiet room at the back of the house with blackout blinds for the kid to sleep.
3 weeks.
There's a painful silence as I look at Eva. Eva looks at the baby, and the baby gazes blearily at me. My tiny house, slightly mouldy bathroom and all, is certainly not the place for a new mother and 3-week-old baby, but I do feel bad to turn her away.
What's her name?
Whitney. I stroke her silky hair. She's very beautiful.
And no trouble, you barely know she was here.
Other than when I'm woken 3 times a night.
I'm sure you're right. Let me think about it.
I open the door to let her out, finding Kat and Hannah on the doorstep, poised to knock. Eva shuffles past them.
I'll let you know,
I call.
Who was that?
Kat asks, after Eva has gone and they're inside. Someone who probably won't be taking Lizzie's room.
How come?
She has a 3-week-old baby under that sweatshirt.
Shit.
It's fair to say Kat doesn't have a maternal bone in her body. She sees the look on my face and slips an arm through mine.
Don't worry. The perfect person will turn up.
Perhaps, I say, really not convinced.
Wow, look at this place. I've never seen it so tidy,
says Hannah as we enter the living room. It may be the only upside of losing Lizzie, I say, dejectedly, wishing she was here with us. Kat reaches out to hug me and I hold her close, far tighter than normal, my loneliness surging back.
You okay?
She asks, holding me at arm's length and scrutinizing my face. I breathe in deeply and release it slowly, determined not to give in to my emotions. On the upside, Eva and her baby did put my own problems into perspective. I may be feeling a bit lonely, but at least I'm not lonely and looking for a flat with a newborn baby.
We brought pancake batter, says Hannah,
holding up a poly bag, and that does it. I burst into tears. Aunt Jane used to make us pancakes when the shit really hit the fan, like when Kat failed her GCSE science prelims and her parents vowed not to let her out of the house until she went to science clinic, which meant no after-school sports for months and Kat having to drop out of hockey scratch. They might as well have locked her up in prison, for all life meant to Kat without sports. Since that time, all else have been sorted over pancakes.
I'll do sofa and DVD. You do pancakes, says Kat to Hannah, ushering me towards the sofa. Sit down, put your feet up, I'll get the Valium.
Valium is how Lizzie referred to Notting Hill, and despite my low spirits, I find myself laughing through the tears.
Careful, you'll get snot bubbles.
When we were at primary school, everyone tried to dodge sitting next to a boy named Luke Matthews, a.k.a. Snot Bubbles, due to his uncanny ability to blow large bubbles of mucus when concentrating. It's been a gross-out topic of ours ever since. Kat sits down beside me and wraps a throw around the two of us. It takes me back to when we were teenagers, doing the same thing on Friday nights.
Hugh will cheer you up. He never fails.
We've got to the birthday party scene by the time Hannah comes through with the pancakes, dripping in syrup.
I'm not sure they're up to Lizzie's standard, but I've done my best,
she says, sneaking under the blanket. The three of us eat quietly, absorbed in the film.
Well, if nothing else, I won't have to eat for another week, I say, finishing my pancakes.
Kat pats her belly.
They were a bit leaden.
Where's Lizzie when you need her?
says Hannah. Probably drinking a herbal infusion in a yurt somewhere.
Who goes on a detox honeymoon anyway?
Lizzie and Jack, we say in unison. For a musician and an artist, they're so un-rock and roll, I say.